Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
And Brian Brushwood.
What's up behind your ear? It's questions for the After Things crew.
What? Oh, actually, we do have them in email. We have a couple responses, some replies from some people. One is sort of a bigger sort of topic, and I'm going to move this one to the last because I'm not sure quite how to go into it. We have an update, though, from Andrew Morris. If you may recall, Andrew had been asked or been approached with the idea of writing for some educational content, and we gave him our opinion about what to charge and whatever, how to approach that, and he has an update. He starts off with, "Howdy, just wanted to give an update and thank you for your suggestions about what to charge for writing short stories that incorporate sets of science vocabulary words for an educational product company. After I sent in the first story as sort of a job interview, we negotiated a flat rate per story, which I found very motivated. So far, I'm 9 stories in, and the client is loving them. She said her editor looks forward to reading them, which I hope is a good sign. By the way, knowing that my writing is going to professionally be edited is such a relief without having to worry about finding and fixing every little mistake, you're telling me. I ended up spending between 2 and 3 hours on each one, and about half that time is spent trying to work in the vocabulary words and their meanings in a way that flows naturally. We also clarified that while our company would own the copyrights to the stories, the characters and storylines would remain my intellectual property to use in other works that I ever wanted." That sounds very, very fair because they don't want you selling it to some other educational company. "Basically, doing this project will give me 36 story ideas. I can come back and expand. I can already see a way to turn some of them into illustrated children's books and a few others into novellas. I'm going to be using tips from How to Write a Novella in 24 hours to get them all done." That's a book I wrote. "I have 27 more stories to go with, a deadline in 2 months, and all the while teaching 6th grade science, working a Saturday job, and being a dad to 3 kids. However, with the motivation of getting a nice check for each story, I've written more in these past 2 weeks than I have in the previous 6 months. Yeah, it's amazing what getting paid will do.
Dude.
Also, I just signed up for the new authorpage.com site. Can't wait to see for it to get it up and running." Oh, fantastic, Andrew. Yeah, I'm going to be doing a... I was going to try to do a beta thing this Saturday and bring in a bunch of people and do that out, but I just kind of got caught up in adding some features and working on behind-the-scenes stuff that I kind of flaked on that and didn't do it. But Andrew, I think that's great. Great to hear that that's working. You're being paid as a writer, which is very, very rare. It's rarer than being a unicorn.
Dude, that's the that's that whole experience of like when you talk to your heroes or a projected imagined version of your heroes, almost all of them will talk about the things they learned during a stretch of their career doing something very, I don't want to say mundane or just something that's not what they do now. You know, like so much of the Scott Adams thing is a good example, right? Like after Dilbert became a success, he kept his day job because it became an opportunity to collect material to create, you know, Dilbert and so on. And so much of Stephen King's writing is based on the time he spent, there's stories of what he called the mangler. I think he was doing laundry or something like that. There was the mangler that would rip people's hands off, and that was just a thing known at work. Likewise, the fact that you are making money writing stuff and the fact that you were smart enough to think down the road, like, what if I have a great idea that I love? Let me protect my ability to use it later. Brilliant, 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 brilliant all around. Congratulations.
Yeah, glad to hear that. Glad it's working out for somebody. Next up, Ken writes in, says, "Hey, After Things. So my socialist government is accepting pitches from Canadian podcasters. The benefits I see them are a government check and an audience boost versus the impoverished freedom to build my audience the old-fashioned way without having to take any dollar sign, hashtag, exclamation point, carrot from old man Trudeau. In the unlikely event that they're even interested in me, I could potentially do both a government shill cast and a punk rock indie one. Yes, I realize this podcast has a strong libertarian vibe, but if you were me, would you take the advantage of these pinkos, or would you tell Trudeau to shove his check between his washboard abs and while he's at it to give me an invoice for all his crappy healthcare?" All right. Dude, listen, folks.
This is great. I think on the count of three, raise your hand if you would take the check. One, two, three.
Do you weigh the freedom of going alone versus resources selling out? So, that's the question. Listen, folks. No matter how much, you know, what you say may sing to us, you don't need to get that political here.
No.
No.
Listen,
whoever wants to pay you to do the thing that you like, then take the money. Obviously, if it's like, you know, something that crosses a moral boundary for you, then don't. But, you know, the Canadian government isn't buying your exclusivity in doing all podcasts forever, right? So
he's faces, I think he's a libertarian leaning kind of guy that says, hey, I'm not for government supports, but here's government support. Is it hypocritical to take it? And, you know, there's a lot of back and forth on that. And, you know, the answer that, you know, that I've heard come up is like, if they made you pay the taxes for it, then it ain't hypocritical to take it.
Sure. Well, and also, like a tangible example is on Scam School, our sponsor, periodically, every year or so, the U.S. government will spend a lot of money to encourage people to either drive sober or get pulled over or to click it or ticket, you know, to wear their seatbelts. You know, obviously, this is government money going to the thing. And there have been every so often these weird comments on the Scam School channel where it's just like, oh, way to suck on that government teat. Yeah, you're divided, you know, screw you, government. But at the end of the day, it's like, that's not the hill I want to die on. I think people should wear seatbelts. And, you know, yes, you know, Discovery is going to collect a paycheck and I'll get a piece of that. And, you know, yes, we'll be warning people that there's increased enforcement, you know, but at the end of the day, it's my job to say what the script is handed in front of me. And if you are, I guess, you know, being a podcaster, same thing, right?
Well, this is just an art grant, right? Like there are a bunch of art grants and you can, and there's art grants in America. There's art grants in Canada. They are obviously now want to encourage people to do podcasts because they look at that as a medium. I don't think that you should have any problems going out for it. And if it pays you, then good. If you don't like the relationship that you have with them or you believe that the terms are too onerous, then don't do it. But I don't think that even if you philosophically say, I don't know exactly if the bang is worth the buck from a governmental point of view, that should preclude you from you know, like Andrew said, you already paid for it. Like it's sunk cost. So if you want to take the money and then do a podcast about how you're wasting their money, then that's fine.
I think that's what it comes down to. Like Tesla got criticized because they took like government loans, stuff they paid back. But the argument was like, well, this is the environment we live in where all the other car companies got these things. And to be competitive, you can say what's in the best interest of your shareholders is to say, no, I'm sorry, there's this money out there, but we have a principle. And the principle is that these things shouldn't be offered. There's a difference between saying something shouldn't be offered versus saying you shouldn't accept it. It's two different things.
Or not even shouldn't be offered, but so much the claim that it's like in a perfect world this would not even exist, but this is the real world and this exists.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'll be honest with you, kid. Like I think you have a snowball's chance in hell getting funded if that's your way. If that's the bent of the talk, the podcast, I would be amazed if the people who approve these things would approve that.
Dude, actually, that'd be great if they did it because of this. Like, it's called Canada Sucks, the podcast. Go on.
I love Canada, but I would be. I mean, it's given what gets funded here, culturally speaking, and there's biases towards that. I can't imagine it's different there, and I would be totally amazed unless they have the most, you know, equal opportunity, let every voice be heard, even ones we disagree with, a sort of mentality, which is rare in many of those environments. Then, you know, that's I love groups that support all forms of speech. You know, there's a group called FIRE, which supports, it's all about campus free speech, and they get criticized for being a conservative organization because they do a lot to sort of speak out for conservatives being able to speak. But they make their point like they are very much for anybody. They've represented, you know, people who are even anti-free speech people, they've gone and defended their right to be heard and to do that, you know, and so they go across the board. They're like, the principle is what matters. The principle is you'd be able to say whatever you want, even if what you're saying is we're horrible, you don't agree with our points of view, that's fine. You should be able to be heard.
Right. But dude, I'm catching a glimpse of another email that I think is a great open-ended email that would lead to cool discussions right at the top there.
Yeah, so I want to hear your response on this one because I don't have a reply. Gavin writes, would be interested in hearing the process of prepping for holiday season 2016 in the mini ventures.
Yeah. So the first thing we did was take some classes on the changing face of marketing. And one of the ideas bandied about, and I love this metaphor, and I think it's something that is accurate no matter what entrepreneur you are, whether you're an author, whether you're a mime, whether you're an independent producer, you got to think of your
the three predominant forms of entrepreneurship.
Author, mime. I just imagine Brian sitting in the class next to a guy in white face, the beret, not even sitting at a desk.
Both of us nodding and like, "Ooh, that's good."
Yeah, and he's pretending to be in a chair and all that, you know.
Exactly.
Because it's got his mime business, you know, that he's working on the mimery.
And he doesn't actually have a pen or a notepad. No. He's just like,
but no. He is faux pretending to write. Yeah.
You're almost about to ask him for a piece of paper. He's that good.
So the question came up, what is the difference between branding and marketing? And I believe they said direct marketing, and they were talking about it in the context of, hammering someone with a specific offer, trying to get them to, you know, buy or whatever. But I liked just in general, just, you know, branding versus marketing. And they said, your relationship with your customers is a vault. It is an empty vault. Branding is when you put money in the vault. Marketing is when you ask to withdraw money from the vault. And by that logic, you know, you look through that lens and you're like, oh yeah, you know, me, you know, us doing a BB Live show for free for 8 months and then, you know, doing NSFW for pennies, you know, for a long time. We had 4 years of branding. So then when we went independent and we launched Night Attack, we did marketing. We did a direct offer. We said, would you guys like us to do a comedy podcast every week? Please go to Patreon. And as they say, there's nothing wrong with withdrawing money from the bank if there's money in the bank. What's weird is when you try to withdraw money from the bank before anything's ever been deposited. And you see this. You see a lot of ideas where people are like, well, I've got a great idea. I'm just going to put it out on Kickstarter and it'll get all the money and then I'll be able to do it. And the problem is that they're trying to make a withdrawal. They're marketing before they've done any branding. And so with that in mind, it occurred to us that part of the brand that we do, and I say we, I mean me and John talking about this, is every week we write out an email, oftentimes talking about a new what's it out there, and we try to be funny and cute, and we try to make it engaging. So even if you don't want the gizmo, you at least want to hear from us. But this week we were like, well, why don't we just do an email where it's just, let's start up a conversation. Let's ask them what they care about, because holidays, you hear stories about how like Lego makes 80-90% of all the money they're going to make the entire year just in the holiday season. Holiday is a very, very big time when people think, who's somebody I love? What is a product that I think matches the way I feel about this person and will say something when they open it under the tree or menorah, or whatever. So it occurred to me, it's a big, big test. And also, the exact people who know the answers are the ones who have bought stuff from us before, or who have expressed an interest, or have signed up on the email list. So we did something very counterintuitive in that I just wrote an email saying, hey, so-and-so, I think it was even, the subject line was favor, ? And I was like, hey, so-and-so, you got a moment? Look, the holidays is a big, big deal. We're doing our best to get ready for it. We want to make sure we do as good as possible. So if you have a couple seconds, what's your favorite stuff on the store? Are there any? Oh, here we go. Hey, Bryce. Oh, Bryce is on the list. Hey, Bryce, got a sec. We're gearing up for the big holiday season, and I was hoping to get your perspective. What's your favorite stuff on the Scam Stuff store? Any holiday discounts or bundles you're really hoping to see? Thanks, man, Brian. And that's it. And I was thinking, it'll be a lot. I'll spend the rest of today reading and responding to each of these. As of now, 24 hours, 26, 7 hours later, I've got 600 of them read and responded to, only 1,200 more to go.
That's amazing. That is an amazing engagement.
It's amazing that you didn't do a Google form. Why don't you just do a Google form?
Well, because that would be different. That would be meme marketing. That would be asking them to actually do a favor. What I wanted to do is convey, And this is what's not said in the email is I care enough about what you think that I'm writing this as if I'm writing to you and we're talking bro to bro. And the obligation for me is that I have to respond in kind bro to bro, which means I actually have to read every single one of them. And they're not long responses. But each one is tailored to what they're saying.
Are you logging it or are you just kind of getting a sense and matching it to your own expectations of what you guys were thinking about working on? Anyway?
The agreement I had with John was I was like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to have time to explain why I'm forwarding certain things to you. Just know that if I forward it to you, I don't necessarily think it's a good idea. I think it's something surprising or that it's in my mind and now it should be in your mind. A lot of the surprising stuff, one of the theories we went in, and this has been fantastic to find out, is that the biggest thing we've gotten so far out of this is that we have vastly underestimated the universal popularity of the lockpicking stuff. We've thought that lockpicking is a small part of the overall website, but sport lockpicking, messing around with padlocks and the ultimate lock trainer, it turns out people deeply, deeply love that. And I would say as many as 50% of the responses have had some kind of thing on that on there.
Well, Brian, if you'd looked at how many of your emails are going to people in federal correctional facilities, you would have known this.
I should have just filtered out all the .govs. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But at any rate, it's been fascinating because along the way, some people will say, oh, you know, it'd be great is a so-and-so bundle. And many times it's something we've thought of and it's good to get confirmation that we were, you know, thinking along the right lines. But then sometimes it's like, holy crap balls. I never thought about that. And I was super excited to forward it over to John. But here's the part I really wanted to get to is there's a significant number of people just responding, is this a bot? And then you respond with like, psh, no. Your face is a bot, you know, and then, you know, something that a bot would not say. And but then there's been two of these so far. So 2 out of 800, not bad. But there have been people who have clearly written like a paragraph and a half meant to get a rise out of me, saying stuff like, oh, I remember your show back in 2008. So popular. Whatever happened to all those viewers? And I'm already thinking like, dude, we're more popular than ever. It's the biggest every episode. This is huge. And then he goes, here's some advice. Don't make your stuff so overpriced. Also have something that anybody wants or whatever. And then goes on. And then, you know, me being, you know, this ass, you know, oh, let me deconstruct. Let me pull off the first part of this Gmail and search just that. Oh, somebody plays Minecraft, does he? Oh, his skin is a Hitler skin that he plays in Minecraft. All right, what else can I find on this guy?
Is this an exaggeration?
Not an exaggeration.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait. Come on,
Bryce. Did you even for a second think that Brian hasn't actually stalked both the people who decided to screw with him?
When he got to the Hitler thing, I thought, this is his hypothetical. He did something else.
No.
And literally. Just
no, this is exactly what he did.
Oh, God.
And then another thing is like, oh, look, here's a crappily made storyboard that was clearly done for his high school class and an anti-smoking message. Oh, I got him. And then, of course, you know, all of this is because I'm hurt because people are saying the things I'm most afraid to hear. But what I actually write back to him is, that's quite a list. Got anything else? ? And then I just put it away. I'm like, doesn't matter. Not worth thinking about, whatever. You know, maybe I'll get around to taking them off the email list some other time. And then the next morning, to my surprise, what I got was an email from this same guy, clearly trying to write to get a rise out of me, saying like, yeah, I do have another thing. You should go on tour. I don't know if you've been on tour, but man, you're a magician and you should be expanding your lineup. You could be making a ton of money. And then all of a sudden I realized that I don't know if he meant to mess with me in his first email, but I know that now he's really happy to be heard and genuinely seems to be wanting me to have success despite his poor writing. And I'm like, hey, man, I really appreciate the time you spent thinking about this stuff. Thanks. And then he responds another time saying like, yeah, by the way, loved you on Penn and Teller. That was a really great skit. And I was like, That was a wild moment because that could have gone a very different path if I had allowed my gut reaction, my animal instincts, my lizard brain to respond the way I deeply wanted to respond to that very first email. And instead, I was trying to explain this to Bonnie, and I was like, in real-time strategy terms, I just took over a city, and now that's goodwill. That's somebody who we're both on the same page of he likes my stuff, and, you know, granted, a lot of his stuff I found online was very trollish behavior, and he loved to make a lot of noise, but there's a lot of energy in there, and I'd rather have that energy on my team than not on my team.
I do think that in general, sometimes people can write things that they do not think very clearly about how they will land, and it can be hurtful or inciting.
What was that goat face?
Sure. But
oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I was a compliment.
In my culture, we love goats. We think they're highly attractive.
Yeah. But I do think that a lot of that comes from, you know, in the issue that you're talking about, a lot of that is just the idea that some part of the strain of, like, is this a bot? There's the most malignant part of that, which is, this is something that I'm shouting into the void, and I'm going to see whether or not that's true, because I'll shout something dismissive or hateful, right?
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of that a lot of that tends to come in. But I think it is good that you did not light him up, for being a cheese weasel.
Well, yeah, I've been going through your site there, because I'm wondering if Brian has one. Yep, he's got that. He's got that. It's such a great inventory of stuff that you have there, by the way, of things you put.
Are you talking about scam stuff? Or?
Yeah. I've just been scrolling through there, just looking at everything you have on there, and I think you've assembled quite a great collection. And the problem is, like, you're going to get, anytime you say, hey, give me feedback, the larger the group of people, you're going to get people who are having a bad day, have something, that are upset that you get to do things that you get feedback over and they do not. And then you have to deal with that. And of course, I mean, the benefit is you can get great, great feedback from other people who are really sincere. And like, yeah, you just sort of, like, you know, whenever I deal with somebody who's like that, I don't really feel compelled to do anything, to respond in tersely or whatever, because I'm like, their punishment is they have to be that person.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a solid dismissal. And if that's what gets you focused on you, I think that's a totally fine way to do it. I just have a real hard time ever making somebody an unperson. Like, I agonized.
I'm not saying I wouldn't. I've responded.
No. But what I mean by that, like I agonized the first time I ever blocked a single person on Twitter because I was like, I'm going to click a button and this person will just cease to exist in my life. And for whatever weird hangup, that's a bigger deal to me.
I've only done that. The only time I've ever is if somebody is just outright, like, racist, angry, like, you're just a blah, blah, blah. If it literally, there is just an expletive laden kind of thing. Not like if somebody on Twitter says you suck, you're right, I agree with you, I'm not going to unfollow them. I'm not going to do that. The only times I've ever done that, I've only unfollowed one person because they were going on a consistent rant, and it was another professional in our industry, I use that term loosely, who was just consistently da 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 da. And I'm never going to respond to them publicly. I'm never going to respond to them in a way. I would never take them apart publicly, and for many, many reasons. I'm not the guy to do that.
All right, first of all, can I publicly apologize on behalf of Bonnie? That was not cool of her.
She made a lot of good points, though. I've only had that happen once, where it was just like every 3 minutes, and it was clearly other people were telling this person, like, man, that, why are you doing? And it was professional jealousy. They were extremely, when I got my show, they were like, you could tell this person was just livid over the fact I got this thing they didn't, and it was just like, all right, there is. It's just an angry, angry, angry person. And there's not, hey, and they keep at replying me, like, are they trying to get me to respond to them or whatever? Because I won't. I'm not going to. If you want to have a private discussion offline, I'll tell you what I think. But I'm never going to berate anybody publicly. I'm never going to. I mean, I will try not to. I may have, but it's not in my brand. It's not what I like to do. I don't feel that's a classy way to do it.
Right.
And, you know, if I have a problem with something somebody does, I might on a podcast say, yeah, this isn't cool, but I'm not going to go as a matter of public record, like, everybody, look what this person does I disagree with or whatever. Like, why? So that's, but yeah, I will only, the only time, other times, like if somebody's like this, if I get like a really vitriolic, just like obscene, you know, like in chat stuff or whatever, I'm like, yeah, I'll block that because that's just crazy. But, you know, if somebody on right now on Twitter, you guys, you can tell me I suck, whatever, whatever. It's fine. If I get an email and you're like, yeah, I didn't like this or da-da-da, I'll write back. Like, you know, thanks. I appreciate your thoughts. I can read all of my Amazon book comments. I can read all of them. And if you measured my pulse rate, you're not going to see me get flustered at ones, people who just – my friends get more upset about that stuff than I do.
I think also there's
my
there's,
own stuff, like my own comments, like oh, this person said this. I'm like, I read that they did that, but I didn't care, you know. And maybe they had a point.
there are days and there are days on that kind of stuff because there was once a time when when I was writing iTrix on a daily basis that we had, and I can't even remember his name now, but there was just a dude who commented on every post. Every single post.
I think I know who the dude is. It was like three capital letters, right?
To be honest, I'm now actually finding a sense of relief inside myself because I can't I can't think of it right now. He would write to every single post, and it would always be, you know, he had the people that he didn't like, and he would always find a way to bring it back to the situations that he didn't like, whether no matter how benign or silly the post was. And sometimes that would be, we would be in that crosshair, and we kind of had to make a decision on like, all right, well, what was our policy in terms of comments, you know? And at a certain point, you know, because that was forward facing, you know, there was a decision made, you know, that we all agreed on, that we were going to keep the comments open, right? And we weren't going to delete things just for being mean or counterproductive or whatever. And eventually we kind of saw some of that traffic, the post counts would kind of go down specifically on, more casual fans, because there was this one dude who was there and being toxic constantly and spitting venom any and everywhere, including toward us. And, that was one of those like trying real, real hard to be the shepherd kind of moments, right?
Yeah, and for us, it kind of came down to it wasn't so much what was directed at us. It was what it was doing to everybody else trying to have a conversation.
Yeah. It sucked. You know, in hindsight, I almost would have just been more aggressive in saying, no, you want to know what? Early on, I'm gonna ban you and your IP, and if you come back with other stuff, then I'll continually do it, because safeguarding the culture is you know something that we had to learn a lesson on. But yeah. It sucks because it gets personal. It's easy to say, hey, just grow thick skin, right? And to a certain extent, that's the simple solution that you have to have. But man, it's a hard road to take that medicine. It's a hard road to deal with it, especially when you care very, very deeply about things or you're monetarily invested in them. You know, there were reviews for some of like, you know, Andrew's products that when we were working together that I felt were unfair and mischaracterized how things went. And I, you know, I felt upset with it, you know, and I felt personally upset by it because, you know, that's our livelihood, you know, that somebody was being cavalier with stuff that I felt was irresponsible and out of pocket. And at the end of the day, it doesn't do you any good. And there's a long trail of dead of people who have, you know, tried to correct the record on a internet forum, right? Only to make the problem worse than it would have been otherwise. But ugh, God, it's rough.
Yeah, but we would say this is frustrating or whatever, and then if we needed to get stuff out there, get copies of a trick into somebody else's hands or whatever, we'd do that, but then we kind of moved on. You know, it was never a, you know, it was like, if we don't think we're being heard or whatever, but other than that, you know, there was somebody said criticism helps you make you better. There's a difference between criticism and then you just get people who just want to be vitriolic. And sometimes some people, any criticism they put in that category, and that's certainly a mistake. If I read a two-star review of one of my books, very rare, but they happen. If I read a review of that and somebody spent several paragraphs going into why, I'll read it and I might pick up something there. I can either one just say, man, it's not for them, which it can be a dangerous road to go down, because if you're overall not trending well review-wise and your response is, well, it's not for them, then you're just basically getting down to where it's yourself. But if you look at that and you go, okay, I know I have weaknesses, and these weaknesses were glaring to this person. Or, you know, you sometimes you find that out.
Keep in mind also, there's a value to, even if they're totally 100% fundamentally wrong, there's a value to knowing that this is a common misconception about your work. You know, like, if I may, everybody who's ever criticized my rad-ass, guile-inspired hairstyle has been wrong. They're wrong. It was a rad-ass hairstyle. However, it's good to know that it appears to be a little bit louder than most people would like in their video YouTube consumption. And that, yeah. and that has shaped, you know, my activities moving forward.
And that was and the funny thing about your hairstyle, and I will put that as a category of people not getting it, is I remember at a magic convention where people were talking about, like, you know, magic tricks, like, oh yeah, David Copperfield's Statue of Liberty vanished. Horrible trick. I'm like, let's see. After Copperfield did that, everybody talked about it. Blade people talked about it, and that became a thing he was known with about for decades later. Yeah, sounds like a horrible trick to me.
It became the single most important magic trick of maybe plus or minus a decade in either direction of the moment he performed it.
Yeah.
Like the most iconic. That's,
it's one of those things where, you know, being a fan of professional wrestling, literally all the media that surrounds it is all about the criticism of the largest company that does it, that has taken a carny sideshow art form and made it a multi-billion-dollar family business, right?
Yeah.
Like, that has taken a company public based on how well they've sold and the collection of very, very powerful intellectual property. And at the end of the day, you're just like, nah, you want to know what? Sure. I'm going to go ahead and err on the side of the people that have created a gigantic empire around them. You know, I'm going to go ahead and think that, you know, maybe even if I don't see exactly the full glittering worth of David Copperfield's signature effects, you know, maybe there's something that I'm not getting. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the disconnect is me not realizing another element to it, as opposed to the other person being overrated or overpraised.
And that's very, very much what I went through with David Blaine. When David Blaine's first special went out, I remember just being angry because he didn't do anything production-wise that I couldn't do, and most of the magic he did, I was capable of, and I couldn't resolve that disconnect between why is he on there? He's doing a crappier version of the same trick I'm doing. He's not even telling a story or whatever. And it took a decade for me to realize that's why he was on television, is because he had the wisdom to strip away the story and instead focus entirely on the wonder and the reactions of people around him. And I was not in a place to realize what he was bringing to the art, especially in response to, you know, that what at the time was the dominant world's greatest magic, everyone playing the same soundtrack, purple lights, you know, moving thing.
Well, and I would say that, I mean, they took the idea of story and moved it, well, to even the bigger part of it, where that, you know, each one of his specials there, it was a, hey, first one is, who is this guy? You know, what is this sort of thing? And sort of the story is like this sort of pseudo doc about this person, David Blaine. And the tricks themselves didn't have a similar sort of magic story structure, but the whole show had that structure. And that's what the Chris Angel, what happened with his show was, let's do an entire series about this very charismatic, interesting guy to a certain segment of people who does magic. That's the magic itself is just this quick, we got to put something together, get a great brain trust together and try to put stuff together. But it was magicians just looked at that little bit, that little trick here and not get like, no, it's the who and the wow and whatever. You know, if a crazy homeless person comes up to you on a street and does a very generic card trick, it's going to be a very interesting experience you're going to tell people about versus somebody who conforms to your idea of a magician.
Yeah.
There's a story there.
Both those guys too. If you're just in a room and they walked up to talk to you, it would be different than just a random person walking up to talk to you. I mean, like they're charisma people. They're charisma bombs in a world, in a magic world that does not have a lot of them.
I had a conversation with, I'm not gonna name drop, but we'll just say a very famous magician talking about, let's say, Chris Angel. and when Chris Angel first popped. And this person said, very wise, said, well, here's the thing. Is you and I look at this guy and say that he's a weird-looking guy, and if we saw him going down the street on rollerblades, he'd be like, what a weirdo. But remember, people are going to turn and look and go, huh, what's going on there? That's interesting. And that's part of, like you just said, and that was sort of to hear a top name in magic explain this is why this is working, you know, much more charitably than any other magician would, and somebody who, you know, was fascinating.
Yeah. So at any rate, as far as the overall takeaway for most of you guys, if you're looking for some kind of creative endeavor, seek to put, quote unquote, you know, credit in the bank, by doing a branding exercise from which you want nothing except for knowledge and increased intimacy with the people you hope to connect with. Now, and this could have just as easily, in this case, we did it with the list of people who had bought stuff from the Scam Stuff retail store. But even when I was touring full time, I could have just written the exact same email to, let's say, you know, a mailing list of 3,000 event planners or, you know, marketers or student activities boards saying, hey, you know, I know we're getting ready for a big year. If you have just a second, could you just tell me what's the most important thing to you when you look for a thing? And even if they write a one sentence response back, like, I want them to show up on time and do a decent show.
Yeah.
Now you are having a conversation, mm-hmm. and now you are a person. You are putting credit in that bank, and it's a lot of work. Bonnie, last night at around 1 a.m., or I guess just past midnight when I called it, she was like, how's it going? I was like, it's work. It's the kind of work where if you see somebody doing it, you say, that's work, you know, which is different from the work I normally do, which is having people clap for me or talking into a microphone or saying what I think about things. This is just work.
but
I think it's important work, right?
But yeah, but Brian, and it's the I try to respond to, you know, every email I get that I can respond to. If it's a make me read a lot and I don't get a chance to read, I won't. But even just a simple thank you, and that's a good point or whatever, that means so much to people. Because I know when I write to somebody who I look up to and they're busy or whatever, and I get a quick like response like that, I'm like, thank you. You acknowledged it. You read it. You gave me a response. Like, yeah, you didn't have an hour to sit down and write me a personal response because you can't do that. But it means so much on the other end. So that is applause, Brian. And it's like, you know, why am I a big fan of David Copperfield? You know, because when I was a kid, he would sit on the edge of the stage and sign autographs.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do that anymore because the guy's almost a billionaire and he's got better things to go do with his time than to go do that. But damn, you know, being a kid, waiting that long, long line. And that was a thing he picked up from other entertainers who realized if you go do that and they meet you, that is 1,000 times even more of an impression than just going to see a show. You went to him afterwards and you were face to face with them. And so,
dude, that's
your emails. That's you sitting on the stage signing autographs.
And it is a lot of work, but it's also so, so important because the performance never ends, right? Let's say in this case, the show is the Scam School show. It doesn't end when the episode's over because the moment it gets posted, I stay up all night responding to emails or mm-hmm. to the comments on there. And it's taken a lot of years to get to a point to curate the kind of audience that will ask more interesting questions rather than dumb hair, you know, whatever. The performance never ends, and recognizing that the tally is always the same. You owe them everything. They owe you nothing. Make sure you act accordingly.
You know, on that note, like, man, when Don't Trust Andrew Main aired, the thing I wasn't prepared for and the thing I didn't know how to deal with or handle was when you get that huge volume right after the show airs in the next couple of days from people, more than you have time to respond to. And because it was a show where I'm going around helping people, the number of requests I got from people to go help people. And then when it aired in India, that was crazy because all of a sudden I'm getting, you know, people asking me to help them with like law enforcement issues or magic curses or stuff. And I said, man, like that's, if you ask me like one of my thoughts on doing TV, I'm like, here's the problem about doing a show where you're doing magic and you're helping people. You're going to get a lot of people asking you for that. And I didn't have, you know, I didn't have like the network giving me like a team of people to help me respond to this, and it fell on me. And that was one of these things that was like, that's part of the job. And that was like, man, that was a fun experience. By the way, a show starts airing, I think, tomorrow in Italy. So,
oh, wow.
You know, I'm actually looking forward to that. But yeah, that's I'm can look forward to a wave of Italian, you know, responses or questions like that. So you have to sort of take what that is. And I realize that for me, like, I will get on little, you know, Twitter tears. I'll get on these little Twitter tears. I'll respond. I'll be engaged. And I try to respond to everybody on Twitter. My favorite thing, though, is I just love to pop into live streams and just sort of like, hey, here I am for an hour or two. If you guys have questions or whatever, I'll just back and forth. We talk about whatever you want. You know, that's sort of my favorite way to interact.
Anything?
I went through one. The has Andrew gotten fat 2 hours? That was fun. 2 hours of people making Jesus. Fat jokes at my expense.
Dude, all right, for the record, if there's anyone who's chubbed up, it's this guy. Don't steal my chubbed up
stop
heat.
Stop it, Ryan.
Well, and the problem was I hadn't. It was like at the like lowest that I'd been in like a year, but it was, you know, it was a bad angle, whatever, and maybe it was salty, but I wasn't really chubbed up. I mean, but it was just a sort of like, and it was funny because I wasn't really, but it ended up being this like an hour and a half of like, yeah, are you fat? I'm like,
I don't know. Am I?
So it was, you know, it was one of those things like, listen, like, I'm like, no, nah, guys, I've been heavier, you know, the last couple of years where you could have really, you know, but it was just a sort of, so it was amusing, but it was like, wow. But I mean, it was fine. It was like, I was everybody's source of enjoyment. It was a fun thing to do. It was like, okay, this is fine. Had I really been fat, you know, and self-conscious, it would have been different, but.
All right. Hey, I've got... I was going to do a pick about an audiobook that I didn't like, but then I realized that'd be a waste of my time, and instead I should make this the first opportunity to announce this week's big push. Justin's coming into town. We're going to be finishing up the album. Really, really excited about it, but this is a significant week because after 9 months, is that how long it's been, Bryce?
9 months? What can happen in 9 months?
Oh, damn!
We're giving birth to a baby. It's the Modern Rogue's own channel. So here's the thing. Modern Rogue, at this point, is doing really, really well. Every time we put out an episode, I'm astonished at how big the response has been. And a few of them have gone viral and have continued to stay viral. It's clear... Like Scam School is wonderful, but it's specific on a very specific, or it's focused on a very specific thing. With Modern Rogue, we're doing our best to make something that everybody can like, or a wider swatch of the patchwork of America. I don't know if that's right.
of America's rich quilt.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Modern Rogue, we think can appeal to a wider base, and we were sketching it out. It didn't make sense to keep it on as a small part of Scam School because, you know, you watch Modern Rogue episodes and then you see the name Scam School and there's a disconnect there. So it is a hard, hard thing to decide to start from the beginning all over again. But that's exactly what we're going to do. We've moved the first 9 months of Modern Rogue episodes. How many episodes is that? Do you know?
30.
Okay, so 30 episodes. We moved them all to the Modern Rogue channel. If you go to bit.ly/Modern Rogue channel, you can subscribe. This is going to be a big push because this week we're announcing it. I'm going to try to schedule a Reddit AMA this Friday to help promote it. New episodes will come out there. We put together a bit of a sizzle reel for it. It would really, really mean a lot to us if, starting now, all of Team Diamond Club would promote episodes on this channel, share them, realize that, you know, if something came out 6 months ago, it could be as though it came out today if you post on a site like Reddit or whatever message forum thread or whatever. Anyway, that's we're really, really excited about it. We'll see.
That is awesome. I'm subscribed.
What was the bit.ly to follow?
bit.ly/Modern Rogue channel.
And that'll take you straight case.
To it. Yeah. You have to reach a certain point before you get a vanity URL on YouTube. So right now we're not at that point because we're just launching right now. But we just want to start shifting everything over. The new Modern Rogue episode will come out on this channel, not on Scam School this week.
Subscribed.
Oh, love you. Thank you.
To... Cheerleader Fitness Channel 101. Oh, yeah, Modern Rogue too. Yeah, yours too, Brian.
Fair enough.
I think this is a great step forward. This is awesome.
Boy, it's tough though, because that's seductive sauce to know that at least some, you know, number of tens of thousands of people will see it no matter what you put up on the Scam School channel. But I think this is right for the brand.
Courage, Brian.
I think the Modern Rogue, for as good as it is and for the quality of presentation that we're doing and for the universal nature of the content, I actually think Modern Rogue has a chance to be more popular than Scam School, which is why we're doing this. But that means in the short term, we have to swallow that bitter, bitter pill.
Yeah, man. But you know, Brian, if I wanted to swallow a bitter pill, do you know what I would use to eat that bitter pill?
Would it be the king of all tiki drinks, the Mai Tai, which you can learn to make on the Modern Rogue?
No, Brian, that's not what I was going to take. I was going to use your magic pills that you sell on your website, scamscuff.com.
Wait, which magic? Oh, that's right. The miracle fruit. Yes. I forget that you don't always know all the new releases we have on there. There's some good stuff.
I was just reading it and then I just forgot the title. So.
Yeah. Right on, man.
So I'm fascinated by this miracle fruit pill that can make anything taste.
Have you never done it? It's amazing. It's really a fun 15-minute trip. Basically, it's just got a waxy coating that blocks your sour receptors, so you can full-on just eat a lemon, and it, pinky to God, smells like or tastes like lemonade. It's amazing.
Vinegar tastes like a mustard soda.
Yeah. Even mustard. I hate mustard, but it just quiets all that down. Guinness tastes like chocolate. It's crazy.
God. Just my mind went to a very dirty place. Next time I've ever faced with a very interesting argument.
Oh, all right. All right. Boom. Oh, will you be serious? bit.ly/Modern Rogue channel.
Yeah.
Subscribe. All right.
Picks. Do we have picks?
That was my pick.
Pick is the Modern Rogue. Andrew, picks?
My pick, if I were to make a pick, I would pull up my Netflix and see what the last thing I watched was.
Narcos.
My pick is that you all, I'm actually trying to remember the name of it. Oh, this is what it was. It's the Wolf Hall, which is on Amazon Prime actually, which is why I couldn't pull that up there. It's a Masterpiece Theater. I've been watching a lot of Masterpiece Theater. I've been working my way through the whole catalog there of stuff on Netflix and Amazon Prime. And so Wolf Hall is the story of Thomas Cromwell, who was the relative of Oliver Cromwell, and it's about dealing with Henry VIII. And it's a very slow-paced sort of show, very, very slow-paced. It's a lot of just, you know, him sort of coping with stuff, but still thought it was pretty good. So the first six episodes are on Amazon Prime.
Nice.
Damn. Nice. I got a show. Ashley and I have slowly been working our way through The Americans, and we are coming to the end of season 3, which is so much better than season 2. I would highly recommend, if you enjoy season 1 and then you suffer through season 2, please make it to season 3. Andrew and I have spent an inordinate amount of time talking about how repetitive plots for spy shows are, specifically spy movies, that they all tend to have similar kind of beats and tropes, and people have become fascinated with these very specific kinds of stories. The Americans is a great example of, like, hey, let's churn out these highly ratcheted tension spy plots that continually never get you far enough away. Like, much like Breaking Bad, you know, it is a show that is very contemporary to Breaking Bad, because it is constantly putting our assumptions of the moral behaviors of our characters into question. It is always kind of never giving us any kind of comfortability of understanding who these people are and what they're capable of, and is just like totally racked tension in terms of when things are going to, you know, come to a head and boil over. So season 3 of The Americans, I've enjoyed it quite a bit.
There is a question that could be a whole other episode, and thinking about, are part of the reasons that the box office has been declining is overall attendance has been declining, and the problem the movie industry faces, is it because TV has gotten so much better that it's so much harder to wow us?
I think it's partly that, or at least the idea that we used to, TV was looked at as this like pulpy kind of entertainment, right? And the real stories with the real actors, especially in the 70s through late 90s, were in the cinema. This is where the auteurs lived. This is where you could really tell an unfettered, personal, amazing story. And now it's like, no, that's all on TV. Right down to the fact that the names that made their hay in these films, both behind and in front of the camera, now work on these amazing movies these amazing shows that very often have budgets that are colossal compared to what you would be able to get for a movie. So I certainly think that's part of it, especially for prestige stuff.
Game of Thrones just is now like the most Emmy nominated, like celebrated show ever. And you think about how you had the Hobbit movies, which just like, I just, when the Hobbit movie first one was announced, I'm like, oh, I'll be interested. But after that, I was like, man, I'm looking way more forward to Game of Thrones than another Hobbit movie. And then, World of Warcraft came out, which, you think that you'd be kind of, by the time you look at it, like, I think I'm just going to, a really good 2 episode of Game of Thrones is going to be more entertaining. And when it can, drama stuff, like there's just, I don't know. It's hard. It's just, it's an interesting place where the medium's in. I don't know.
I think so.
I just don't know. I don't. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.